Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Vanessa. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hey, well, thank you for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I am a historical fiction writer. I write in several genres, particularly Regency romances. Got about 21 plus books. We're at the point, you know, where we, you know, you got to just kind of hide the age at 21 plus books. and I try and focus on the diversity in various spaces. I love the tension where you have the ton and you have middle class, or you have some of the upper middle, some of the upper class folks all entwined, all trying to find their happily ever after. And then you see these people of color, because they existed and they lived and they loved and they did business with, intermarried, all these different great different tangents that factor into the stories that I like to tell.
I love this. So were you a romance reader before you start writing romance, or which one came first?
I was a romance reader. Usually after a very difficult math exam, I would need something to be on the completely opposite side. Mm-hmm. Something that would relax me, something that I knew would have a happy ending. Mm-hmm. Point blank is, you know, after you do enough derivative equations, you need a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my gosh. And so what kind of romance did you read? Did you read like historical, or was it...
Yeah. So primarily it was always historical, because I needed to, you know, I like being taken away to a different place. And I love like Grace Burroughs or Eloisa James, Julia Quinn, Beverly Jenkins. There's just so many books that just help you be some other place. You get to live another life for at least a couple hours when you read a romance book.
I love this. Yeah. I love like historical. I discover historical late in life. Well, I discover romance late in life. So historical is like the later part of it. It's been like such a joy to go back to your backlist, to like all these like authors' backlists, and try to explore, you know, what historical is. So I love
absolutely. It. And you're going to have fun. You may find some objectionable content, because our, you know, the perspectives of what is acceptable has changed. Some of the earlier books, you know, push the envelope. Let's put it this way. Push the envelope. They've never been done. Some of them are dark fantasies that have been written by women that were never accepted before that point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you look at it from that lens, you can understand and enjoy some of the early titles.
I love this. So I've been asking this question to authors because it's really interesting to see, you know, what sparks joy for you. Is it writing? Is it something else that you do and just feels like flow and you feel like working? And it's just like kind of like nice thing to do. It can be writing, but I know writing can be a job too. So it can be something else, like gardening, baking, whatever.
When I get stuck, what do I do?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you right now. I have a reward system.
Oh my god!
Chocolate.
Oh my god! I love this.
Yes. So it's like, okay, Vanessa, you got a good chapter. Piece of candy. Vanessa, you got unstuck. Piece of candy. Vanessa, you turned something on top. Piece of candy. And it's gotta be the good stuff. Okay, guys, you can't gyp yourselves, right? You've got to get the good stuff. But not too good. I just had a box of Godiva, mm-hmm. and that's like a two-piece hit. You can't just eat one. And it's like, that will blow the whole game. It's one piece for one accomplishment.
I love this. And so what's your favorite chocolate, actually?
It changed last night.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yes, it's good. Oh my gosh, this is so good. I love this. I love this question because it's like, it's a fun way to find self-care, like an opportune places. It's like, you know, I love your reward system. Like, you know, just did good. You got a chocolate. Skull star. Yes. It's a chocolate star.
There you go.
So what's been the process of writing during pandemic? Has it been any easier, any harder? Has it been changed or hasn't changed at all?
My writing process hasn't changed. It's more so improved. I have a collection file of like interesting things, right? So most of the times I'll find like an interesting fact and that will generate a story idea. So I'm always in the UK archive newspapers and I'm looking at things. And one time I found an ad by a woman looking for a husband in a newspaper.
Oh my God,
1805-ish, right? That just blew my mind because most of the times we always assume, you know, they're such delicate flowers. They would never take this kind of possession of their life. Oh no, bold in the newspaper. She was looking for men to meet, and she says, for the object of matrimony. And so that I was like, what does that look like? And then you put in a cast of characters, how would they go about doing it? And that actually spawned a series. So usually I'll find something and that'll come up with a great idea. And the process is I want to try and every writer needs to know how fast they write. Mm-hmm. Because when you know how fast you write, you can plan out your process. Because the worst thing in this world, you agree to a deadline, whether you're self-published, indie published, or traditionally published, everybody needs deadlines because anything without a deadline doesn't get done. Mm-hmm. Forever put it off. Mm-hmm. But if you know how fast you write and how, you know, including how many times you go through your edit process, etc., you can make a realistic deadline. Mm-hmm. And you can get it done. And so for me, it's just been more so figuring out the story I want to tell, getting it on paper, getting it edited and perfecting it. So I'm trying to work on this process of how do you move from the idea to the laying out of the story and getting the job done. Yes. Might be slightly that engineering background where I try and make everything a formula, but that's the whole story.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh my gosh. So let's chat about your latest book. So you got a couple books coming out this year. So let's chat first about An Arrow, A Girl, and a Toddler. What is the elevator pitch and what was your research process like?
One book in mm-hmm. the series. So the first book was A Duke, The Lady, and the Baby. This is An Earl, The Girl, and the Toddler. I bless you, Kensington, for allowing me to have these titles. I love you guys so much. Because if they're corny, they're going to be Vanessa's title. But anyway. This one centers on Daniel Thackeray. Daniel Thackeray was the barrister in A Duke, The Lady, and the Baby. He's the nephew of Lady Shrewsbury, who's the person who developed the Widow's Grace, which is a secret society of women who are dedicated to restoring widows across the country. Because during that time frame, women had very little power. And if the family that you married into didn't like you and your husband died, so you no longer have protection, they're the ones that are supposed to administer your widow's dower. They could manipulate things in the courts, they could take your children away. It was a very precarious situation. And so this organization steps in to do that. Jemina St. Marr has amnesia. She was in a terrible accident. She only remembers the last 2 years, and those 2 years were spent in Bedlam. She is freed because Daniel Thackeray was able to get her out of Bedlam. She now is in possession of a fortune. So she has men coming out the woodworks trying to marry her, but she doesn't want to marry. She doesn't even want to think about a man until she knows who she is. She wants to be whole, and she does. She's not going to be whole until she knows who she is. Except there is one man that she keeps running into, that she keeps getting into his sphere, that she's now finding herself attracted to, and that is Daniel Thackeray. Daniel Thackeray has been elevated at the beginning of the book to Lord Ashbrook. He's a single dad. He's a widower himself, And he's trying to navigate the world because his world was pretty set. He's in the court system. He's a very progressive barrister. He's got a great reputation, but there are people who don't want him there. He's a Blackamoor Earl. He's a Black man. There's some uncomfortableness that he's experienced, and he's been able to navigate this. And now you shift him to be an Earl, and he's got a whole other web of people that he's got to now, you know, balance with the courts and the expectations of being a peer. Oh, and then his aunt keeps with these women are going to go to jail. And this is another thing. He's got to figure out how to balance all these worlds. And, you know, he's a single dad, and, you know, it's been two years since he's actually even thought about having any kind of relationship. So he's got all these balls juggling in the air. And now this woman, Jemina, won't leave him alone, won't let him be. And he might have a few secrets that she needs to know, but he just doesn't want to tell her. Elevator pitch or like a train version.
Oh. Oh my god, yes, I love that you play with the Misha pod. Like I've seen it in historical, but not a lot of times, and I'm like, I'm trash for it. Like there's something to be said about the Misha pod, like oh my god, you know.
It's one of my favorite tropes, right? I love the two tropes that'll get me every time is the marriage of convenience, right?
Yes.
Oh, they gotta get married. Oh my gosh, I don't even know who you are. Right. And amnesia, I really don't know who you are, right? I don't know who I am. You just have so many different possibilities. It's a playground. For a writer. And so I love those. Those are catnip. Total catnip. Yeah. This is my first amnesia book. Yay!
Yeah. Yes, I'm trash. I was like, I read the synopsis and I was like, oh my God, I need to read this book. It's like, it must read. Like, amnesia, you got me with that. So, I'm a single parent, you know, like, hello. So I love this. And you have another release, a historical fiction release. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes. So this is my actual debut in historical fiction. It's called Island Queen. It'll be out in July, July 6th. What we talked about, you know, finding these little snippets, right? So one time I found this cartoon image, and it's a picture of Prince William Henry, and he's in bed in a hammock with a Black woman. Now, typically during this time frame, particularly the artist Gilroy, he's kind of masochistic, chauvinistic kind of guy. So, and he loves poking his fingers at the royal. So he drew this image, but this woman is drawn beautifully. Typically, when it's everything that he's doing, he'll make big lips. He'll make, you know, I've seen him do some really outrageous things to women because they're all part of the joke. But in this case, this woman was drawn beautifully. So she wasn't part of the joke. She was part of the tattle. He was telling on what the prince was doing in the West Indies. Prince William Henry, AKA future William IV, is the sailor king. So he manned two different frigates. He's always in the West Indies. He had multiple affairs with women down in the West Indies. He liked the party. He liked the dance. That's the whole thing. Yeah. So I went on a quest to find out who this woman was. And I literally tracked him down to the island of Dominica, where he was very taken with this mulatto woman and literally showing her around and whatnot. And so I came across the name Dorothy Kirwin Thomas and looking at her life, and it's amazing. She started out enslaved. She literally buys her freedom and that of her children. And she goes on to build businesses across islands in the West Indies to become one of the wealthiest women in the West Indies. And there's a point in her life where she has to call upon all her strength in order to fight for women just like her, because the colonial assembly in Demerara, which is present-day Guyana, decided that these women of color had too much money. They were gaining too much influence and power. So to curb that, they wanted to tax them for all of the rebellions that were happening. so that they would have to pay money to rebuild buildings, et cetera, pay for the military, because the rebellions are always so costly. Things are burnt, broken down. All. You should really stop enslaving people and then you would get rid of the rebellions. But you know, that was like, no, we can't do that. But so she ends up literally going to England and meeting with the secretary, Lord Bathurst, Secretary of War and the Colonies, and she convinces him to abolish this tax. So this book actually goes through her life. She's such a fascinating woman. She makes choices that blow my mind. I would never have done it. Her choice of men are fascinating all unto themselves. So there's love stories within the book. It's a celebration of finding your power. So I think it's an important read. And everything we think we know about the Regency time frame, because she lives through that time frame, it's going to really level set, because she did a lot of things that you will hear people say, oh no, that never happened. No, it did, and she did it with grace and power. And she's just a phenomenal woman. She's flawed now, don't get me wrong. There's mess in the book too. There's a lot of mess in the book because she was fascinating. Fascinating goes both ways.
Oh my gosh, I love this. I can't wait. I read a lot of historical fiction, but I think this is like, most of the historical fiction that I have read is World War II or like, you know, the 1900s, but I think it's something to be said about Regency and about this time period. Like, what do you know, to look at her story, it sounds fascinating. So I can't wait to pick it up.
Excellent.
Awesome. So what are you working next?
I am actually working on my second historical fiction. It's called Sister Mother Warrior. And I'm looking at two women who helped shape the Haitian Revolution. Haitian Revolution was one of the only successful rebellions turned into a revolution that added liberty. So all the people of Haiti were actually freed by this war. But there are two women, Victoria Montu, Abadoya Toyo is her African name, and Mary Claire Bonaire. They, one woman is literally trying to feed all the people. She's getting on mule trains to go in places where there's famine because the wars are starving people out. They blockade the cities and so food can't get in. She literally expects that these people are going to stop shooting and allow her and her women on mule trains to come in to feed the people. And they did, which was, you know, fascinating all unto itself. And then you have Toya, who is a Dahomey warrior who gets enslaved. And their connection is a man called Desdalines. Desdalines comes after Toussaint Louverture. There is a crisis because Toussaint has been captured and taken away by Napoleon. There's no leader now in Santo Domingo, which is present-day Haiti. Mm-hmm. And Desdalines steps up to the forefront, and literally his military mind has been shaped by Toya. The way that he goes about his battles, the way that he's engaged, all of that acumen comes from her, from sitting at her feet and her teaching him as a young man how to fight, how to do all these different things. And then the heart for the people comes from Mary Claire, the wife, once again, the woman on the mule packs that is trying to feed the people. So you have these two influences, war and peace, that are trying to shape this revolution. And we'll see who wins.
Oh my gosh. So what kind of research process do you do? So how do you go about researching these? Like, you were nonfiction, or is there services that you use?
All of the above.
Okay.
I read a lot of nonfiction. I will not show you my floor right now because, see, I'm at the end of Sister Mother Warrior. So my floor is like stacked right now of like all these books. So you name it, I either have it in a digital, access through digital archives, or I have the actual books, because I have street maps. I've got books on fashions and going through the different, you know, because it changes every 5 to 10 years. There's a change in both men's fashions as well as in women's. So I've got stacks and stacks and stacks of that. I try and get access to diaries. I try and get access to first person accounts. This last one I had to do was a lot of French translation.
Oh my God. I can imagine, because I was like, me. Like I would say French. It's like
French, I thought it was decent. Not really. It was sad. So that was a bit, that was a bummer right there.
I was just telling you, I love that you bring all the Caribbean. I'm from Puerto Rico, so I'm like all Caribbean related, you know. It's like, I love it. I die for it, because I'm like, I grew up in the islands. Like, it's like, there's a unique culture. The colonialism is there.
You know? And the thing is, every island is different. And that's one of the things I want people to really understand, because, you know, we have this mindset, oh, it's just palm trees, you know, and a beach. And, yes, you will get some palm trees and some beaches, but there's so much more, and the cultures are so much more than that. And there have been some books, but I really want to focus on women, and I want to focus on women who've done really great things, and the history has either been ignored or it's been hidden. Mm-hmm. And at either case, it needs to be brought to the forefront. And if I can do my small part to bring some of these stories to the forefront, I'm going to do it.
So thank you for doing God's work. You know, thank you for bringing these women's stories to the forefront, you know, whether it's in romance or historical fiction. I think it's such a valuable place to bring in. So what has been a book that you read this past year, last year, at some point that you can stop recommending, can stop gushing about?
Okay. So that would be Wild Rain by Beverly Jenkins. Mm-hmm. That would be Wild Women in the Blues. So I got two wilds for you. Wild Women of Blues by Dineas Bryce. Wild Women in the Blues by Dineas Bryce. Mm-hmm. The Rose Code by Kate Quinn. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal. And I'm halfway through Take a Hint, Danny Brown by Talia Hibbert.
Okay. Oh my gosh, you're like my kindred spirit. I have to tell you, I read all of those books and I'm like, it's so good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Take a Hint, Danny Brown, a romance loving hero. Call me, just sign me up for that. Yeah, so I love this. So tell us where you can find you online.
Go to VanessaRiley.com. VanessaRiley.com has all of my socials on it. It's got my newsletter. And trust me, I'm not one of those who bombard you with newsletters. You're lucky to get maybe three a year. I'm trying to get better with this. But yes, and then I'm active on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and it's got all the different connections. So once again, VanessaRiley.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Vanessa, for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. This was, have me back.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.